Good.
Access number 30399, Mr. Bill Parr, Real 6. Now, which, you know, when you got there, which company were you put in? What, you know, how did they all sort you out?
Well, they sorted us out. I was in 4 Platoon Baker Company.
And you were with them all the time, were you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, any particular characters that first, you know, when you first got into 4 Platoon, I mean, do you remember your platoon sergeant or any particular figures that sort of, before you'd been in action, sort of struck in your mind?
Sergeant Hutchinson, his name was. He was a sergeant. Great guy.
What was he like?
Great guy. Good guy. He won a military medal in Korea. But he was a good sergeant.
In what way?
He wasn't to be frightened of, from. You know, he's... If you had something to ask him, he would listen to you and he would give you a straight answer. He wouldn't sort of belittle... Some of them, I've heard them, some like, belittle the guy, you know. Sergeant, that sounds, oh, you should have known this and known that. Not Sergeant Hutch. He would tell you.
His real name was Hutchinson.
Hutchinson. Sergeant Hutch. Yeah, Sergeant Hutchinson, his name was. And there was also one I remember there. Our platoon commander. Platoon commander. Second Lieutenant John Gillespie. Gillespie. Yeah.
And what was he like?
Great guy. National Service. His father was a school teacher in Kent. Funny enough, I remember this. It's as plain as day. And he was fair-skinned and ginger.
Now, did he know what he was doing, really?
Oh, yes. He was a good... If I think he was... Although he was National Service, I think he was staying on. The same as myself, because when I was in Tel El Kebir, I'd made me mind up to stay on.
I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So what was... I mean, how did Gillespie get on with Hutchinson? Because sometimes it can be difficult, you know, the platoon sergeant, the platoon commander... How did they
he was
on?
That way, he would get on with anyone, and anyone would get on with him. He really was.
He could take advice.
A nice guy, yeah. Yeah, and he did do as well. Being, I mean, Sergeant Hutchinson was a regular soldier. And John Gillespie, he was a National Service, but...
You don't know Hutchinson's first name, do you?
I don't.
You wouldn't use it, no, right?
You wouldn't use it anyway.
Now, but, you said you'd extend. Tell me why you'd extended your service. Because had you extended it, or had you become
a regular? No, I hadn't. I hadn't. No, I was going to, but the going into the Black Watch, I was wanted to know because I really wanted to go back in the Camerons when they asked for us to go into the Watch. It was only for the duration. And then I was going to revert back to the Camerons. Then I was going to sign on.
As a regular?
As a regular soldier, yeah.
Now, why did you decide to do that?
I really made me mind up. I'd done, possibly because I hadn't done no ball at camp. The minute I finished my training at Fort George, I was shipped out to Tripoli. And I don't know, but the Scots... At the Highland regiments didn't seem to do a lot of Blenko, the bits of coal and all that, you know, and the bottoms of their boots and polish the studs, and they didn't seem to do that. Well, I never done it anyway, and I was never knew anyone who did do it.
So you decided to do it, to sign on, to but sign. You hadn't done it.
But I hadn't done it, no.
Now, so what sort of, you know, what state was the 1st Battalion Black Watch in when you joined them? You know, you join a unit, you get a pick, you know, you just, whether in a good nick or bad nick, really.
Good nick.
They, in what way?
Well, first off, they had a commanding officer who'd been in the 2nd Battalion through Burma, and he was a chindit anyway, whilst he was in Burma. Because the 2nd Battalion were chindits. And David O'Neill, David Neil Campbell Rose, to give him his full name.
The David Rose.
David Rose, great guy. Yeah.
Now, what was so good about him? I mean, did he impress you when you first joined at Crail?
He was a guy that you would follow anywhere, and he was an officer. He wouldn't take no bull from you, but at the same time, if you was at a genuine grief, you know, you could go to him. That was a sort of impression. He would be fair with you, although he wouldn't stand no bull, like, you know, which was right. And he was just a nice guy.
Did he have an impact on you when you first saw him at Crail in Fife?
Yeah, very imposing man.
In what way?
He knew what he was talking about straight away. He knew when he'd give you a brief on where we was going, he knew what he was talking about by being in the Second World War and coming from the jungle anyway, from Burma. You thought, well, this is a guy I could follow, like, you know, because he knows what he's talking about, and his officers as well. Major Irwin, which his son now is Major General. Is he Adjutant General, sorry. Adjutant General, his son is.
Now, what about Major Irwin? What was he like?
Red Angus, great. A Company. Red Angus, they called him. He was another one you'd follow anywhere, because he knew what he was doing. Yeah.
And what about your A Company, B Company?
Yeah, Baker Company.
Who's your major?
Our Company. Major Rowan Hamilton. Angus, Rowan Hamilton.
Double-barreled?
No, his first name was Angus. But Rowan Hamilton's double-barreled. Cousin to the Queen Mother. God rest her soul. He was called Black Angus, funny enough.
And what was Rowan Hamilton like? Well, Black Angus.
Yeah.
What was he like?
He was a nice guy. Really, I don't think he should have been in the inquiry, really. He was an officer. He was a peacetime officer. That's the impression I got.
In what way? Now, how did you, in your mind, differentiate between the two sorts of officer?
We never had much to do with the company commander, like, you know, like the jocks never. But that's the impression I got when I see him, that he should never have been out there. He should have been a peacetime officer, like, you know, in the Black Watch.
He wasn't war-y enough.
Exactly. Because he never even looked like a soldier, really, I'm sad to say. But he was a Black Watch officer anyway, and he had his medals up. Yeah.
Any other characters in the regiment at that time? I'm talking about before you go out, you know, it's just to get a picture of them when you join them.
Not really, no, there was I can't even think of their names. So.
Now, what about training? You joined them at Crail. Were they training?
We didn't have much training to do. We were kitted out mainly with kit and that.
Now, what kitted? Because kit's quite important. I mean, as you said, the Argyles and the Middlesex weren't kitted out.
Well, they weren't kitted out when they.
So that was a year or so before.
Coming from Hong Kong and then going to Korea.
Now, what were you kitted out with? What special kit did you get?
Well, we had our. It was like a. It wasn't even thermal stuff. It wasn't even thermal what we had, except our boots. They was insulated, special boots was insulated. But not at the time we used them, because it was summertime when we was going out there. So we never used that stuff, really.
But you got it.
We got it anyway, but we never used it, not until November time, when it really could, like,
right at the end,
really cold. Yeah, we never used much of that stuff.
Any other special kit?
No, not really. No.
Now, how long were you at Crail?
I think we left in May.
So you were only there a month. At
That's
most.
All, yeah. But we had a fortnight's, we had embarkation leave before that.
Did you get vaccinations before that, or had you already had
no,
them?
No, we'd already had them, yeah.
So tell me about the embarkation leave. What you
well, that
about?
Was... I just came down home, that's all, and... that was it, really.
What did you... You know, what did your mum think of that? You going out, you know, your family think of that you were going out like that?
Well, my mum never knew that I'd volunteered, and she went absolutely bonkers when she knew where I was going. She was going to write to the MPs, and I went, hold on, mum, I volunteered, it's not their fault.
And how did she react to that?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Did you get in trouble?
Oh, did I? Yeah, did I get some stick? Yeah. Yeah. Because being the baby of the family. Yeah. But it went off all right. I was glad in one way because while I was home on that embarkation leave, there was also a school friend and lived close by, Freddie Risson.
Freddie
Risson. His father was a 22-year man, Royal Marine, and he was the same Royal Navy, Freddie Risson. And we only lived 5 minutes walk from one another and went to the same school and that. But he'd signed on already in the Royal Navy. And he was home on leave at the same time as myself. Great. We used to cut quite a pair of figures. Me with my kilt and him with his bell bottoms. And yeah.
So you go around in uniform when you're on embarkation leave?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Were you allowed to wear civilian clothes? Or?
Yeah, you were, but I'd grown out of them.
Now, what about the trip out with the battalion then? You went out in May.
Yeah, I can't remember the troop ship we went on.
Doesn't matter. No, I mean, when you're on a lot, it sort of blurs and runs through it.
Oh, it was great. And entertainment. And as I said before, Lieutenant Colonel Rose was a great entertainer with his men. He mingled all the time with the jocks. We had some good sing-songs on the deck. And he was participating all the time with songs, quoting Robbie Burns. He was a great guy. And his officers as well. It sort of, his style rubbed off on his officers. And it was a good time going out. I'll tell you about David Rose later on.
Now, which route did you go? It's a hell of a journey. I mean, they weren't fast, these ships, were they?
Oh, no. No. I can't really remember where...
Remember the route or...
No, honestly, no, I just can't remember the route which we took.
Did you do any training on board? Because you used to do some firing off the back on some of them.
Oh, no. No, I don't think we ever done that. I can't recall doing that, firing our weapons off. No.
See, it's a bit of a blur, the journey.
It is, really, yeah.
So where were you going to?
Pusan.
So you went direct, you didn't go to Japan?
Oh, no. Although they did have a weapons school there in Japan, but we was already acclimatised anyway to weapons and that, so we never went there.
Now, what do you remember about arriving in Pusan now?
Pusan, yeah. Funny enough, they call it Busan now, I don't know why, but it was Pusan, spelt P with a P and pronounced with a P.
So you got there, what, June?
I think it was late. No, it was earlier than June we got there. Yeah.
So when was it? May?
May, the end of May sometime. It was May, it was May we got to Korea. And I remember coming off, it was Rob, our drum major, Rob Roy, drum major Roy, we call him Rob Roy. He took us off. Took us through the main street, stopped everything with the pipes and drums, and took us up to the station in Pusan, where we laid on the track. That's all it was. With our kit hanging round us, just laying in between the tracks, waiting for the train to come up to take us up. And that was about it then, because we never seen much of it coming straight from the boat into the station and laying on the tracks there and waiting for the old trains.
What are your first impressions of Pusa? What do you think of Pusa?
You could smell it before you got there. You really could. And it was all then. It was all rice paper houses. That's all it was. Ramshackle. Ramshackle. That's all it was.
So what happened next then? You're at the train station.
Well, we're waiting for the trains coming. It's not... All I can remember from then on is this train coming up. As much as you call it a train. And we're sitting on wooden slats for seats. Going up. I can't remember where we went to from there, where we was based. I really can't.
Whereabouts was it, roughly?
We was going up north anyway. We were nowhere near Seoul. We was further north than that. We was well up. I can't remember where we was, honestly. Where we stopped off.
Okay.
Because it wasn't long before we was mounting guard on one of the hills there, which 355. That was a nasty one.
Now that's in the Koang San area.
Yeah. 355. I think that was our first position there. 355. I'm sure it was. Yeah.
And what were these? I mean, that had been occupied a fair while. Hill 355.
Oh,
what were the defensive positions like that you took over from?
Oh, up there they was quite good, like, you know, but you still get the incoming all the time. And also there was another one. 355 was fairly quiet at that time, but there was another one. 59. 359. I know it was a 5-9, and that was a treacherous one, that was.
Well, let's do the first one first. Were you on 355 long?
Not for long, no. No, it was a fairly quiet position we had there.
Now, what were the defences like on one of these hill positions, you know?
Well, they was like trenches.
Slit trenches or continuous?
No, continuous. Continuous trenches.
So how,
they
how
weren't
can
slits.
You describe them, you know, what the trenches looked like, how deep were they, a fire step?
Well, then they was coming up to chest high.
So that's about 4 foot high.
On that position, yeah.
Would there be a parapet, you know?
Yeah. No, 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 there's no parapet. It just went there and it sunk down, like, you know, into the valley. And that's all their positions were. Then you had the barbed wire defences in front. But we never had no action on that one, on 355. Only.
So you weren't under fire?
Only incoming. No, only from the incoming, like, you know, that's all.
How thick was the barb? Was it dannet wire or whatever it was?
No, it wasn't. It was just strands just hung up. That's all it was. I think it was on 355. I think that the main assault was gone by the time we got there. That was in the 50s and 51s, you know, early 51s. Cause this was 52 we're talking about now, see? So the main assault on these hills was over with. Fairly quiet, except for the incoming, like, you know, the shells and the...
Now tell us about the Chinese shell fire.
And
what
the mortars.
What was it like being under shell and mortar fire?
Well, you sort of got used to it. We had hooches, what we called hooches. It wasn't a foxhole, it was a hooch that you went in.
Now what's a hooch?
About 6x6 dugouts, that's all it was, a dugout, that's all. Cut into a hillside with sandbags and all that, you know. But the thing is with rats.
Now hang on, you're jumping again. The dugouts, I mean, what size, 6 foot six, 6x6 foot?
That's all, yeah.
And what would be in there?
It would be nothing really, only your sleep. We had sleeping bags at the time. Was a sleeping bag. Where they got the beer from, I don't know, because I never drank beer then, but there would be beer bottles in there. Asahi, I think it was. Asahi beer. basically your own personal kit.
And how many to a hooch?
Well, there's two of us. Two of us to a hoochie on that position.
And would there be any heating in there? I mean improvised heating, because it's quite dangerous. There've been people killed with.
Yeah, no, there was. We never had one, but there was a paraffin heater they was using that used to burn up and flare up. But we never had one. We wouldn't have one.
Now, tell me more about this shelf. How bad was the Chinese?
When the incoming used to come in, it used to come in, and you'd have. At one time, on one position, there were 6,000 shells an hour coming in.
At Hill 355.
355.
There.
Yeah, there was quite a bit there, yeah. Yeah.
And that's your first time under proper fire.
Under
how
proper.
How did you react? How did you feel under fire?
Nothing at all. It didn't.
You weren't nervous at all?
Weren't nervous at all, no. No. We was only waiting for them to come up because of. We thought they would be coming in under their own fire, which they did do at one time.
But not there?
Not there, no.
Now, you mentioned rats. Were they a problem at Hill 355, or was that later?
They was a problem everywhere.
Well, what is the problem with the rats? I mean,
I don't know. Whether the rats, they was big as well. Big. They'd be in a corner. Your hoochie would come. And there'd be a hole in the corner. Now, funny enough, they knew before you did when the incoming was coming. You'd see a rat looking at you from the corner. Big things. You'd be in the quiet. All of a sudden, he'd gone. All of a sudden, he ain't there. You haven't done nothing to frighten him. He'd gone. Seconds later, bosh, you was getting it. The incoming was coming. Oh dear. All of a sudden you'd see it, it'd stop and he was be there.
Now, were they a nuisance to you or were they just there?
They would. I was off duty. I'm laying down, open my eyes and there's one on my chest. But they'd be gone anyway. But I think it was, those that occupied them fortifications before we did. I mean, there were some that never used to leave their defences, even to go to the toilet. And I think that was the problem. They'd eat and leave food about, and that was it. The rats knew where there was food to get them, and they.
Yeah. You weren't bothered by them. They made you jump if they were on you, but you
weren't. Oh, if they was on you, they made you jump. But other than that, the rat's a rat.
Did you shoot them or try and kill them?
Nah. I'll tell you what happened.
Is that there?
Once. No, not in our place, but in a hoochie near us. Somebody shot one and the hoochie come down on top. You can imagine sitting in a little 6x4 and a 303 goes on. Yeah. I mean, the hoochies was all right. Not from blast and shrapnel, but not by a direct hit, you know. They was all right, but from a blast inside.
when you go in, we're doing the sort of routine of life, and it applies everywhere, I suspect.
Yeah.
What about the food? What food would you get up there? You know, I mean, was it American rations or what was
we
it?
We had K rations. What they call K rations.
Are they British or...?
No, they was American, they was.
And what were they like?
It was a square box. You'd have the thing we did like those smokers loved them because they'd have either a packet of Camel or Lucky Strike. Lucky Strike was the favourite, I think, because everyone used to like a Lucky Strike. I wasn't a smoker at the time, and Lucky Strike, yeah. But the Camel. They used to say, I don't know what it was, it may have been the saltpeter that was in them. But when they smoked a Camel, little sparks used to come from them. I think they preferred the Lucky Strike. And then you had the main meal.
What would that be?
Whatever that was. I can't recall.
Was it
what
struck? Because in those days, American food was different from British food. I mean, it was more sweeter and richer. I mean, what did you think of their food?
I liked it. Mainly because it had a Hershey bar in it as well.
Chocolate.
It was a Hershey bar. Lovely, great. I'll give you more cigarettes for a Hershey bar. Hershey bar.
What about the main meals? They were all right for you.
Yeah. Yeah, chicken and, you know, stuff like that. But we got by on it.
And what about tea? I mean, how did you get your drinks? Was it brought up as water or tea? Or
it was brought as tea, you know.
And what was the tea like?
Yeah. That was all right. There was no bromide in it.
Tell me about army tea, because, you know, people always say it's very sugared and special in some way. What did you think of army tea?
Well, you could stand a knife up in it. I didn't mind tea like that anyway, but without the bromide in it, the taste. I liked army tea.
So what was it like? Was it just very sugared and very strong, or what was it?
Well, it was made in a big urn, wasn't it? Like, you know, you used to either dip your thing in it or open the tap, and I used to like tea.
And was the sugar already in it?
Already in it, yeah. Yeah, there was no sugar laid out or nothing like that. It was not really. I didn't have a sweet tooth, like, you know, but I used to enjoy the tea what was there.
Now, yeah. What about, the latrines? You did have latrine discipline, didn't you? I mean, the previous units may not, but you did.
Well,
what were the latrine arrangements for you lot?
Not really. We had a desert rose. What they called a desert rose.
Now what was that?
If you wanted to squat, there was a metal funnel stuck down with a metal thing on top, like a rose, and you sat on that and done it. That's all. It was you never had it in the desert. Why they called it? I suppose they did have it in the desert during the Second World War, where places where you didn't have no proper latrines, but that's what we used to have, a desert rose.
What about shower facility? Was there a mobile shower, or what about washing, shaving, showering?
Oh yeah, you'd wash and shave. You must do.
Where'd you get the water from?
Well, we used to wait for a truck to come up. That was the main thing there, you know, being in the hills. You used to wait for a water truck to come up, and you could shower. You could shower, I should imagine, but we
can't
never
remember it that much.
No, I can't remember showering that much. We did used to have a strip off washdown when the tanker come up, you know.
Now, what sort of duties did you settle into? On Hill 355, that's quiet.
Mm.
So what was a typical day like with the duties? You know, I mean, you know, the Chinese aren't attacking you. It's not that bad. What's going on?
We used to be on just standing to, like, you know. Not actually standing to, but you used
to... Would you have a morning stand to, or were you too far away from the, you know?
Oh, no, you was watching them over there. You was...
But, you know, was it a morning stand to and an evening stand to, or was it just all you had a century?
Well, we had a morning stand to.
What's the morning
stand? And you had an evening stand to.
Now, can you just explain what they are? Because people don't know now.
Well, you're standing to. You're not relaxing when you stand to. You're there for a purpose, as though you're expecting trouble. You're expecting the enemy to advance on you. You're there. You're not relaxed. You're looking. You're listening for an hour, you may be. 7 to 8. Stand
and you'd all be out doing this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.